Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the challenges of political transitions in Africa. Observers say while some African leaders come to power through elections, most African rulers access the highest office in the land through selections. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali. And today it's a discussion and analysis on the challenges of political transitions in Africa.
And coming up later, you have weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them just ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
Some political transitions in Africa are smooth and predictable, but many are not. My colleague Paul Sisco has more on the story.
Kenyan police are detaining opposition politician Maguna Maguna at Nairobi Airport. The deported opposition leader was charged with treason for his support of Raila Odinga, who symbolically inaugurated himself as the people's president January 30th. Maguna, a lawyer and opposition politician of dual Kenyan and Canadian citizenship, was deported last month during a government crackdown following the symbolic swearing-in of Odinga. Several journalists covering events were injured at the airport, and columnists from Kenya's top media group have resigned in further protest. Let's back up. March 9th, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga met in a call for unity, hoping to settle months of violent post-election tensions.
So we have a responsibility as leaders to be able to come together to discuss these issues.
Then visiting U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson was quick to comment.
Both of these men showed great leadership in coming together in the agreement that they signed today. And the United States looks forward to supporting the process that was announced to bring the country together and to address the various national divisions.
And Ethiopia's ruling coalition has elected Abiy Ahmed, its chairman, making him the country's third prime minister in 23 years. Late Tuesday, Ethiopia's ruling coalition voted Abiy Ahmed as the nation's new prime minister, following the resignation of Hailemariam Desalegn last month. The Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front chose Abiy to succeed Hailemariam as the chairperson of the coalition, meaning he automatically becomes prime minister. Also Tuesday, a last-minute decision by Sierra Leone's Supreme Court postpones till Saturday the scheduled runoff election between ruling party candidate Samora Camara and Julius Bio of the main opposition party. The winner replaces Ernest Koroma, forced to step aside after his second term as president expired. Mustafa Y is president and CEO of Mamba TV.
The precedent is there. So I think other African countries should be looking at what's happening not only in Sierra Leone, but also what happened in Liberia and learning from it and really making sure that there are peaceful transitions in throughout of Africa.
Tensions and unrest continue in Cameroon, where elections take place next October. Paul Biya is stepping aside. He was elected for another seven-year term following a 2008 constitutional amendment removing term limits. Political analysts fear an extension of what some consider a political dynasty by the ruling party in Cameroon. And in Egypt, an election that has been called a selection, an endorsement, and even a coronation by some critics. Current President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is set for an easy victory after authorities urge people to cast their ballots and provide a strong mandate for the former military commander. Many more serious candidates were forced into stepping down. Egypt's Elections Commission says the vote will continue to be free and fair. In 2013, the ex-general Sisi led the overthrow of Egypt's first democratically elected president, Mohamed Morsi of the Muslim Brotherhood. Finally, Nigeria. In contrast, Nigerians will hold presidential and National Assembly elections next February. It will be Nigeria's ninth presidential election since independence in 1960. In May 2015, incumbent president Goodluck Jonathan left office after losing a close vote to President Muhammadu Buhari. It's not clear whether Mr. Buhari will run again. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Dr. Iyabo Obasanjo-Bello, Assistant Professor, College of William and Mary in the United States, State of Virginia. And she also served as a one-term senator for the Nigerian state of Ogun, 2007 to 2011. And Dr. Ebenezer Akwang, leader of the Southern Cameroon Defense Force. I have to say, Iyabo and Ebenezer, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question and comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111. U.S. country code is 1. Now, Iyabo, thank you so much for coming, because the last time I think I remember you really on this platform is probably about 2 years ago.
Yes, I was here 2 years ago and we chatted about the Nigerian election then. It was just before the election, I believe, and here we are now.
That is very true. As a matter of fact, at the time you were talking about President Goodluck Jonathan.
Yes.
A man who obviously lost, accepted defeat with grace. Did you expect that from Abuja?
Definitely. It was obvious he was going to lose. You know, I think the discussion we had on that day was all of us, actually all your guests that day felt he was going to lose because the signs were out there. I expected him to leave with grace because we've not had in history of somebody staying in power, although we've had militaries that have stayed, but we've not had an experience of a civilian staying. But also, we've not had the experience of a civilian losing while it was, I mean, we've had people that were timed out by the Constitution, but we've never had a sitting president lose. And it was important that that happened, that the sitting president lost and left. And so I expected him to leave because he had no choice. I mean, you lost fair and square. There was nothing to be done about it. I think, yes, and he did the right thing. If he had done the wrong thing, I think that it would have turned out badly for him, very much like it did for Gbagbo, some of the other people, like what did for Jammeh, so it would have turned out bad. So I think I won't praise somebody for doing what he needed to have done. You should be praised when you do something extraordinary. I don't think it was an extraordinary feat. It was.
What about trying to do or influence some kind of creative accounting? I mean, this happens pretty much across the continent.
You mean people not leaving?
No, they call it rigging.
Rigging. In that case, I think that our experience in Nigeria, at least from what we know about the Nigerian election, why the rigging could not be effective in this point was that, first, its popularity was so bad. That was one. So to rig, you have to have zones where you are popular, because you can't rig where you're unpopular, right? You rig where you are popular. And I think they tried to do that. But there are also limitations in terms of demography. If the places where you are popular do not have enough population so you can rig enough to cover where you're unpopular, and that was the two most populated parts of the country, the north and the west, where it was unpopular. And so the places it was popular, even with the numbers there, it could not overcome the place. And that was, so they did not do good accounting it. So if you have to read, you also have to know math. So to be able to, and also I think that the second was the internet. What happened was that at every polling booth, people were taking the picture of the of the things. And so people, you could actually count the votes from, not because you were the agent or you were a government person, you could tally it because all the opposition made people send in the thing, and it was on the internet. Anybody could just go and count the number. So before they announced, everybody knew he had lost because they had the count. So if they had tried something else, they would have had to call all the agents and say, did you sign this? And then so it was a very hard thing to do.
But Iyabo, you're really trying to sound logical. When it comes to creative accounting, the business of rigging, my friend, you have a situation where the results do not necessarily reflect the will of the people, but in fact reflect the will of the individual that announces the results or counts the votes.
Yes, the head of the agency that in Nigeria, it was just tough because there was an attempt to do that. If you recall, on the day of the the day of the announcement, there were, but you cannot cheat on the announcement day. That was the thing. You have to be, to actually be a rig, you also have to have common sense. You have to have rigging takes skills, unfortunately, and I think they just did not have. And I'm saying it was a good thing. But, yes, it happens all over Africa. And we've had elections in which it rained and nobody came out. And they said 99% of the people voted. And people accepted the result because there was nothing to do. But in that election, it was a very tough one for Goodluck Jonathan. Unfortunately for him, his luck had run out at that point.
You obviously had a great chairman of the Electoral Commission, Professor Jega. Let me come to you. What about Ebenezer? What about Cameroon? You got political independence or political flag independence back in 1960. You have only had two presidents so far. The incumbent, Paul Biya, came into State House 1982. We are still counting. Is he a God's gift of sorts to the Cameroon?
First, let me chip in here. Shaka, the Cameroon that had independence in 1960 does not have anything to do with the Cameroon where I come from. French Cameroon had independence on the 1st of January 1960, while the British Southern Cameroon was a self-autonomous governing territory. We had walked out of the Enugu House of Assembly in the eastern region of Nigeria at that time. And we were on our own. We had a government. I think I brought this here so that you'll be able to see it. And
I remember that
We had a government.
You had a choice.
That is a government. Now, I'm trying to say that we had a government which was totally different from that of the Cameroon that had independence. And that is why when you go to the United Nations, the name which Cameroon gained independence in 1960 is in French, La République du Cameroun. That is what we have today. That name has nothing to do with the former British Southern Cameroons, which had a plebiscite on Saturday, the 11th of February, 1961, to decide whether to join an independent Federal Republic of Nigeria, which had gained its independence on the 1st of October, 1960, or an independent La République du Cameroun, which had gained its independence on the 1st of January, 1960. So that is the first thing I want us to correct. And for the other...
The idea of British Cameroon becoming a legitimate, independent, sovereign state? What happened?
Well, there were a number of factors. First, there was the Cold War. We are victims of the Cold War. The British Southern Cameroons are victims of the Cold War. There was a Bush War, a very brutal, bloody civil war that was fought in East Cameroon against Ahidjo's forces and French forces that were stationed there.
Ahidjo, the founding president of
Amadou Babatoura Ahidjo, who became the first president of French Cameroon. Now, during the course of that civil war, there was a group they called UPC, Union des Populaires Sans du Cameroun. It was communist inclined. So they fought because they were calling for something they called total independence, l'indépendance totale in French. So they said they don't want the French. And the French sent its forces, including the forces of French Cameroon at that time, and the crackdown was massive. It was horrible. In certain areas, whole villages were wiped out. So what happened during that period is that those who escaped during the course of the civil war came to the British Southern Cameroon's territory, which already was self-governing. And our prime minister at that time, John Gofoncha, open the doors for international rules and regulations by giving them refugee status. Some passed through Nigeria, went to Ghana. Nkrumah now became the front man between this group and Moscow. They were sent to Moscow. So the British and the French were scared that an independent Southern Cameroon will create a heaven for communism in between a capitalist-leaning Nigeria and a capitalist-leaning La République du Cameroon. They did not want Prime Minister Tafawa Balewa and President Ahmadou Ahidjo to have a communist country in between them.
Tafawa Balewa.
So that was one of the reasons. The second issue was that Her Majesty's government, which was in charge of the former British Southern Cameroons, saw us as, they said we are going to be a string to Her Majesty's purse, just like the Gambia. That we're too small, we had nothing, and if they have to allow us to have independence, it means the United Kingdom will still have to take charge of us for a number of years.
Are you smaller than the Gambia, for example?
Well, when international politics come to play, those things are not considered. They were looking at what they were about to spend. That was part of their consideration. Then the third issue was that the French, they masterminded one of the most political acts of thievery in Africa, in that part of the land.
You probably will tell us a little bit more about that. But first, what is your citizenship as we talk when it comes to Cameroon?
I am an Ambazonian. I come from the land called Ambazonia, the former British Southern Cameroon.
What passport do you hold?
What passport? I have an Ambazonian passport. I'm sorry, I would have brought it here for you to see.
Is that part of the Cameroon, an independent member of the African Union? The last time I checked, frankly,
Puntland don't belong to the EU. We don't need to belong to a club.
Puntland is part of Somalia.
No, Somalia does not even exist. It's a failed state. We have to be frank. It has failed. Somalia does not exist. That is why
Al-Shabaab... You're creating your own rules.
I am not creating my own rules. I am working through the norms of the way international diplomacy works. That is the reality. Somalia has collapsed.
But sincerely, when you came to the United States of America...
Yeah. I was brought to the U.S. as a stateless person. I came here as a refugee, not as an asylee. They knew I didn't have a country. So they brought me from Nigeria, where I had lived for 3 years, under the protection of one of Nigeria's best head of state.
And who was that?
Matthew Olusegun Obasanjo.
Who happens to be the father of your fellow panel.
Oh, that's wonderful. But frankly, he is the best thing Nigeria has ever had. I am speaking from the perspective of a historian and a political scientist. That is the best thing Nigeria has ever had.
Oga Pata Pata. They call him, what do they call him?
Baba.
Baba.
Which is Baba. Father.
Very interesting. No wonder Raila Odinga in Kenya, who happens to be the major opposition leader and a great friend of General Olusegun Obasanjo, retired but certainly not tired, is also called Baba,
yes.
Called the same thing. But let's face it sincerely. Tell us something about the resilience of Paul Obiya, the president of a country that... You don't want to be associated with
it. No. Paul Biya is a product of the French. Paul Biya is an anathema that has affected our people? Paul Biya is a cancer to Africa, not just to our people. What he has done represents the worst in totality of the African continent. This is a man who has been in power for 36 years as president. But before then, he has been the power behind the power, from director of civil cabinet to secretary general of the presidency to prime minister of the republic. The French created Paul Biya.
But how do you say to those who actually will tell you that he is a symbol of peace and stability?
Well, it depends on what peace is. I understand that international diplomacy has sacrificed freedom, liberty, and justice on the altar of development and, in quote, peace. I know people talk about peace. We don't have peace in that part of the world. What we have is the existence of a temporal negative peace. What we need in Africa is a permanent positive peace. We don't need the type of peace where people are caged, they are held in fear. They can't. You are scared of going out to say something. I watch one of your programs where we see what the beauty of Tanzania. But people are still complaining about problems in Tanzania. We have a problem in Africa. The problem in Africa is that those who have been at the helm of Africa have not been leaders, they have been rulers. And they have turned their rulership to what I will call Republican kingship. Africa seems to have kingdoms claiming to be republics. That is why somebody will stay in power for 36 years. The U.S. will condemn elections which he has rigged. The next day, the U.S. is having business to do with him. The French will condemn it. The Commonwealth will condemn it. The next day, they are having red carpet for him. Right in Geneva, all our monies in Africa is being banked there. It's developing the Federation of Switzerland, and the people of Africa cannot even buy Niva Queen.
As a matter of fact, I recall reading about your president Biya being, living in an intercontinental hotel on the top floor in Geneva for like 3 to 4 months. Who pays for that?
Who pays for that? The wealth comes from the British Southern Cameroons. That is why Biya will not want us to go. They don't like us. They don't like my people, but they have a problem. They like what is beneath our soil.
So, Ebenezer, if I heard you correct a little bit earlier, you do not believe that Biya is a symbol of peace and stability. Biya? Because you probably agree with some who say that peace and stability is not necessarily the absence of war or violence, but perhaps the presence of social economic justice for all.
Of course. Can you measure the level of joy in the hearts of the people of the former British Southern Cameroons or even citizens of La République du Cameroon? No. The people live in total fear. In Biya's own house, I am very sure that the wife Chantal has her limits in what she says. Because this man is ruthless. I am saying this because I have been a victim to this man. I've been a victim, so I understand this guy is ruthless. And if we can take out Saddam Hussein on, in quote, flimsy basis, I know what he did to the Kurds. Why have we not been able to take out Biya?
Yeah, but Mr. Biya, of course, is president of the Cameroon. Also happens to be a neighbor of your country, great country, Nigeria. And he's not alone in that particular league. There are several other African rulers, really, who have been in power for several decades. How do they manage that? Because there are some people, actually, who perceive them, frankly, as God's gifts, God's political gifts to their countries.
Definitely, they're not gifts. I think we can start with that. And I think we can look at the historical perception. When people say that they provide stability in Africa, what we found is that it is a temporary stability, like my colleague on the table was saying. Let's just give some example from West Africa, where Nigeria is. So compare a Senegal to an Ivory Coast. As a child, my dad made sure that on vacation, when all my friends were going to Europe and the US, we went to African countries. And so as a child, I visited almost every kind of country, because when we complained, we traveled. We went to Cote d'Ivoire at that point, Ivory Coast, and are we sure we're still in Africa?
Well, that's during the time that of the old man.
Yes, the streets were clean. Yeah. You didn't see people, because West Africa, you know how we are in West Africa. The streets are crowded. The markets are crowded. People are shouting over there. You go to Ghana. There was nothing. It was like being in a foreign land. We're like, oh my goodness. We kids were very happy that we were not in Africa. Well, we knew we were in Africa. And then you go to a Dakar, that point, Dakar was still okay, and it was Senghor. Mm. But there was still that sense of liveliness that you get in West Africa. What happened? Senghor decided to retire. Mm. And basically was still alive. It was not killed. It didn't die of natural causes. Left the scene and chose a person, changed the constitution so that people had 2 terms, and left. And since then, Senegal has had election as at when due and has not missed an election, and nobody has stayed over their welcome time, and things have moved on. The last person to try and do it, Wade, he tried to change the constitution to use it. They were like, no, this is not part of our thing. We're not going to do it. Right. Then you go to Ivory Coast, that looked like the most peaceful place in West Africa. What happened? Ofe Boina died in power. Once he died in power, there was struggle to who will succeed him. That struggle basically turned into somewhat of a civil war. That struggle led to Gbagbo coming in. That struggle led to a civil war. And now when all the other countries, what then happened was that in the early 2000s, when the whole of West Africa, Liberia had been peaceful, everybody was going towards peace. Ivory Coast was still the only country in chaos in West Africa because there had been this piece of the
facade
of, the facade of facade. Peace of peace. And then look at, again, Ghana. Rawlings is still alive. He basically did the same thing, changed the constitution, said, look, my time is over, gave it. And that creates peace. If these leaders really love their country, the best gift they can give them is eliminating themselves from power, just remove while they're still alive.
You talk about Ghana. I mean, in addition to Flight Lieutenant Jerry Rawlings, retired but not tired, you also have John Kufuor.
Yes.
And you also have John Dramani Mahama.
Yes.
Who are basically, in retirement, so to speak. And you also go to your country. You have, in addition to your father, about five former military heads of states or presidents of Nigeria.
Yes.
Still living in their country, interacting with their people.
Exactly. And so these leaders need to realize that if they really look, because there are things that we're doing so well. If you are doing so well for your country, then the only way to sustain how you are doing well is to say that the country doesn't need you anymore. It's like having a child. Once you are raising your child so that child doesn't need you anymore. And these people should be doing a country where the country doesn't need them to be there anymore and can run on its own. And they really don't understand what leadership is. If they think leadership is for them to be there to run the shot until they die.
Ebenezer, what do you think about the events in Ethiopia? We just had a new chairman of the ruling Ethiopian People's Revolutionary Democratic Front, even though there probably isn't any democracy because, let's face it, the Obama administration characterized it as 100% democracy. The reason is simple. There is not a single member of parliament from the opposition in that country.
Every time you hear a political party or a country with the word democracy lying on it, you know it's an autocratic system.
Like the Democratic Republic of the Congo?
North Korea, DRC. So you can check, look through history. The moment you start hearing democracy...
The People's Republic?
Of course, yes. It's all... Look at what is happening in Ethiopia. From the moment that Dr. Haile Selassie died, every other thing in Ethiopia has been a farce.
You don't really think that there was... credit that is due to a man who happened to be president,
Mengistu
Haile Mariam.
No, I'm coming.
Who came up with some fundamental land reform?
That is a problem. That is why I said Mengistu Haile Mariam came up with land reforms. And then what did he take away from the people? He took their rights. He took even their ability to breathe. They can't eat well. He made Ethiopia to become a laughingstock of the continent, and by that, he made Africa to become a mockery, where we need Bob Geldof and others to come and save Ethiopians and save Africa. He became the image of Africa. That is what Mengistu Haile Mariam did. But so, that is not all. Look at Meles Zenawi. Where did he die? We have a problem. He died in Belgium, and he died in power. We have a problem in Ethiopia. Ethiopia was supposed to be a typical example of Africa because it's one of those countries that was not colonized. But they have failed the entire continent. So when Ethiopians have to take an action at this moment, it's just like Nigeria in West Africa. Nigeria knows every action they take is not just for Nigeria. It has reverberation in the whole of West Africa.
So, Ebenezer, you agree with former U.S. President Barack Obama, who said that even with prosperity, without freedoms, such as freedoms of expression, freedoms of the press, freedoms of association, freedom of worship, that it is a sort of a fundamental form of poverty.
100%. You can give everything to someone and take just their freedom away. They will not be free. You will realize revulsion. Look, they will revolt. So when you... It's just like what is going on in Rwanda. Rwanda is a typical example where people talk of wonderful development and the rest. President Kagame He's a great guy.
We'll come back to President Kagame and more because time happens not to really be our best ally. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Digizi, you what? And of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. We've had a lot of great feedback on social media this week. Kenya's political stalemate continues as the country grapples with post-election tensions and deep political divisions. Sierra Leone is set for a March 27th run or vote for president after two leading candidates failed to secure a 55% majority. And Egyptians are casting their ballots with only two candidates in the race. Incumbent President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi appears to be the clear-cut favorite. And so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, why are there often challenges with some political transitions in Africa? So let's start here with a tweet from King Chroma, who tweets, actually, over the years, transitions were very difficult in good numbers of African countries. And even up to now, we're still seeing some clinging onto power at the detriment of the masses. Henceforth, I think good numbers of African countries are now transitioning peacefully. We have another tweet here from Robert, and he says, the problem is that incumbent heads of state are obsessed with retaining political power for life, where the constitution is considered a paper adjusted any time to suit their interests and the national army personalized, and the rule of law is a dream far from reality. Our last tweet is from Martin Noel Behande, who tweets, they lack pre-organizational and planning strategies with Africa. Many leaders struggle much on how to oust leaders and do not plan on how to manage transitions. The question of what shall we do when we get there is always left out. The short sight is we remove the regime. That's it. Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Omonua Okogba from Nigeria, who writes, yes, most of the time there are huge challenges to political transitions in Africa because the leadership qualities of the incoming government is usually suspect. In other words, the populace does not trust the electoral process and the willingness of the incoming government to protect their legitimate interests. Let's go now to our last comment from Facebook fan Nora Osende from Uganda, and she writes, most countries in Africa operate with semi-authoritarian regimes, which are very good at holding multi-party elections, while at the same time making sure that the core power of the government is never affected. They hold elections, but the regime is not going to lose those elections. They manipulate state institutions for their own ends. There is no respect for the law, and they don't work through institutions. A reminder for you, of course, that we do appreciate all of your social media comments. If you are a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And to comment on our Facebook page, just enter these keywords on your screen right now, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. And to join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And do follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Of course, Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or you can simply go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page that is on our website. And to watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we continue our discussion about presidential transitions on the continent. We will take a closer look at Sierra Leone, where a troubled runoff is underway. The country's Supreme Court approved the Election Commission's request to delay the runoff presidential vote after the lifting of an interim injunction that had stalled preparations. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
And that's it for our social media segment. Shaka, you and the guests, of course, have a lot to discuss, so I'm going to hand it back to you.
Thanks, Heidi. And, of course, our topic for today is a discussion and analysis on the challenges of political transitions in Africa. And our distinguished guests are Dr. Iyabo Obasanjo-Bello, Assistant Professor, College of William and Mary in the U.S. state of Virginia. And she also served as a one-term senator for the Nigerian state of Ogun, 2007-2011. And Dr. Ebenezer Akwang, leader of the Southern Cameroon Defense Force. I have to say again, Iyabo and Ebenezer, that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Tell us, Senator Iyabo, how come you were a one-term senator? You ran in 2011, and what happened?
I lost.
Why did you lose?
I don't know why I lost, but I'm happy I lost. My decision was not to run. Not run for election, but I realize, and I've actually talked to people like that, you can't retire from politics, apparently. Mm-hmm. And so once you are in it, people expect you, you keep having followers that expect you, because there is, and then you have kind of staff and all the people that their livelihood depends on you. So you have, so I made a decision not to run. Then I was convinced that, you know, you have to, a lot of us are, we believe in you. And I did. And, you know, I'm kind of, I have no regrets about losing. I think that if I had not run, I would have probably felt regret and felt that maybe I should have, and that, you know, I had something. But losing was an easy thing. So I could tell my supporter, see, you know what, I did it and I lost. Bye-bye. Next time, we'll try again, but there probably will never be a next time. So.
Well, how was it like being a senator, and also, let's face it, at earlier, being a daughter of a president who was not only president once or head of state once, not twice, but in fact three times.
I mean, I don't see it as any. I think for others, it was an issue for them. But for me, me and my siblings were raised as independent people. I have a memoir out, and you can read it to find out about my upbringing. My parents have always been very, very, very clear. We were all very independent, and that was the way we were brought up. So I kind of had no, and but because of the way I was brought up, and I had leadership all around me, I'm always interested. I've always been interested in governance, and I've always been interested in governance, not only in Nigeria. Like I said, my experience growing up was that we went to all the other African countries, because that was part of what my father thought was important for you to be as a 20th century African, was to know what other African countries are. So, and that opens up you up to all kinds of ideas and all kinds of things. So for me, I saw it as a natural extension, not because I was, but because of those experiences that all my father's position had allowed me to view and see. And so it was a general extension of that.
How was it like growing up at the famous Dodon Barracks in Lagos?
It was Lagos, yeah. I mean, it was actually a military barrack that was turned into when the military took over. So it wasn't fancy. It was not a very luxurious. It was so you can imagine, it was the biggest house on this barrack that was turned into the residence of the head of state, and it was actually right in the middle. So all around it was just the barracks itself, just as any military barrack. So there was really nothing fancy about it.
Was it Major General Ironsi who first called it home, or was it General Yakubu Gowon.
I believe it was Gowon because for a long time it was after the because it was moved because of the multiple coups. That was when the seat became in the middle of the barrack. I think they used to be at the former parliamentary area where the British used. The British had the, where the Governor General used, but that is in an open space. So I think during the military rule, I think Gowon was the first person to actually live in the barracks.
Ebenezer, you were saying something about the Rwandan president, Major General Paul Kagame, retired but certainly not tired. And, of course, he also is, happens to be the current chairman of the African Union. You were saying something about him. This is a man, come on, man. I mean, he recently got almost 99% in the elections.
Shaka. The problem in Africa is that African leaders understand what it means to say I won the vote 100%. Ask Amadou, the late Amadou Ahidjo, he will tell you that.
Why?
President Kagame
was
not...
Was he an expert in that?
An expert in that. He was. We had learned a lot from him. And President Kagame is not a bad man per se. He did a very wonderful job in ending the issue of the genocide, the Gachacha, and all the other issues.
That is not very clear because there is another point of view.
Yeah, that is my point of view. But my problem is that upon all the issues of development and the praises being given to him, just like the United States used President Museveni as a point man or a front man or whatever. You used a certain language here.
Nyambara. Nyambara is a Swahili word meaning supervisor or headman or foreman.
Yes, of course, because President Museveni was like a supervisor or headman for the United States in the issue in South Sudan. I know that very well. But the problem with President Kagame is...
Do you believe that the Southern Sudanese... they not deserve freedom?
No, they do. 100%.
I actually have an opinion that they might not have. Because you deserve, when you get freedom, and when he's talked about freedom, freedom comes with a lot of responsibility.
Yeah.
And when anybody in any situation, when you talk about freedom, it has responsibility. If you get freedom like the South Sudanese got, and your
on
response...
You think they got it on a
silver platter. Freedom is never easy to get. But then you do not turn around and fight yourself. There is your freedom, and this is the what Africans don't understand.
Maybe they were fighting for something else other than freedom, actually.
Because the oil was the oil. Which is resources is always
privileges.
All our fight in Africa end up either it is instigated from outside because of the mineral resources or it is within ourselves. In the end, it's all about money, unfortunately, because that is what they turned out. This is what it shows. So I think I don't agree that they deserved it, because if you deserve something and when you get it, you will value it and treat it like gold. You won't now desecrate it and start fighting each other. So I disagree.
My concern is that I was about saying something first. My concern is that President Kagame is doing a good job. But when you find...
A good job for who?
For the Rwandan people, for the issues of development and the rest. But that is not what makes you a decent man or...
Is it for most of the Rwandan people?
Not for everybody. What I'm trying to explain here is that through President Kagame, the West has proven that they don't give a damn about the issues of freedom, genuine peace, justice for Africans, as long as there is someone there who could be for them. Look at what is happening. The Rwanda general who was killed in South Africa. Imagine what the Russians have done in London.
You mean the colonel?
Yeah. The Rwanda...
Are you talking about Patrick Karegeye?
Yeah.
Chief of external intelligence?
Yes. So what I'm trying to say is that...
Do you have any specific evidence? Evidence?
Let me come. You're asking of evidence. The United States and the United Kingdom are punishing the Russians for doing the job they normally do in taking out opponents. What did they do to Kagame when he was being accused that... That's not the first time that Rwanda has been accused for taking out opponents to the regime who are out of the country. What did they do to him?
As a matter of fact, there were other... agents of President Kagame who were recently apprehended in the United Kingdom on assignment.
I want to add to that in a way that I agree with some and almost all. I think that you cannot say you are good for a society and suppress it. And when people cannot even talk about tribe, which is part of the law. You know why the U.S. has succeeded in reducing? It's because everything is counted in what you can call tribe or ethnicity. Mm. Because if you don't know things are unfair, how can you correct it? Which is just saying that we cannot talk. And I will also use the example of Nigeria. The example of Nigeria is that you can go to a Nigerian newspaper today and find every tribe accusing each other of whatever they want. This looks like chaos to you, but in the end, it's freedom. And because of that freedom, we know each other. We know what the unfairness everybody feels is documented and can be seen. Once you hide that freedom, something is brewing in Rwanda, and we all know it, but we don't want to talk about it because everything is being suppressed.
Unfortunately, time is not a best ally. When the producer tells you to go for a break, you have to go. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. Participate in our conversation. Please call us at 202-619-3111. This country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away because we'll be right back with you.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African Beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at voanews.com/African Beat.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much. This is Gizui Uwad, and of course, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Ebenezer, again. I'm sorry that I really interjected a little bit earlier, and I hope that you'll find some space in your beautiful, I hope you don't mind about saying, your Cameroonian heart and soul for that.
Like as I said, if there is anything I hate, it's being a Cameroonian. I'm not one.
I see.
I don't deal with a system which is it's a clear-cut system which has imbued my people, has annexed them, enslaved them.
I think that requires a show. We'll have a show on Cameroon one of these days.
And, okay, that'll be fine.
Probably part that you call something else.
Yes.
Let me be honest with you. There is a saying, frankly, and I believe in it, that the intellectual power, the intellectual balance of power has been shifting in the favor of the African intellectual. What have you as an intellectual? I see you have a salutation of doctor, so obviously you must be an intellectual. What have you been able to do so that to ease the problems of your people, to influence good governance and improve the quality of life of where you live?
Shaka, Professor Lumumba said something. I listened to it yesterday.
You mean the Kenyan professor?
Yeah, the Kenyan Professor Lumumba, yes, mm-hmm. said that the problem with Africa is that those with ideas don't have power. And those who have power are void of ideas.
Don't have ideas.
So we can all be PhDs here. Most often, we don't have the possibility to change things, though we have a case scenario of Pascal Lissouba.
Kwame Nkrumah, the Osagyefo, the founding leader of Ghana, was an intellectual. Julius Kambarage Nyerere was an intellectual.
No, it depends on how you
Kenneth
judge.
Kaunda.
It depends on how you judge
they
the whole issue.
Leopold Sédar Senghor of Senegal was an intellectual.
I don't see doctorate degree as a or professor being what they call, in quotes, intellectual. That is not the way
the
word intellectualism.
None of those people had PhDs. Yeah. My own thing, because I was going to use that example, in Nigeria, everybody that shouted out of the system, when they've been brought into the system, sometimes they were worse than the people they were shouting about. Mm. So basically, we have a problem. I think the issue is, it's that our society itself, there's something wrong. And you can even see the transition sometimes coming into when you have a society that the only way you can actually live a good life is to be in the system.
Right.
That means that if you're out of the system, your house has no water. The roads that you climb, you have no resources. People will do anything to be in the
you
system.
You have no access to medical care.
You have no access to medical
care. Children cannot go to a
exactly.
good school.
So this desperation. This desperation makes people, when they are at the outside agitating very hard, once they get inside and they get to that luxury, they forget what they got there to do. And what we always said, what societies have been able to do in the past is that people on the outside that are intellectuals, right? They had something to fall back to. They went to the universities and still made a salary. Do you know what the salary of the average university professor in an average African country is?
No.
It is very low. What I mean, so that if you're a professor,
it's not a living wage.
Right. So if you're a professor and you get a government appointment, you will do anything. If the leader says, you know, just go on TV and announce that I'm the king of the world,
right,
you will do it because the benefit, and that is the reality on the ground. Until we change the incentive, we're not going to get it to be better.
Thank you very much. Let's go to, I was hoping that there is the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. There is someone from Ghana, from the U.S., Faiya from the U.S. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yes, please.
Yes, hello. I am a Sierra Leonean here in California.
Okay.
And I've been watching your show. I'm very, very enamored to be on right now. Actually, as my country is going through elections now, and you're talking about sharing of the national cake and all that, but I actually wanted to talk about the fact that leaders perpetrate themselves more in power. Look at all that Great Lakes region. I mean, you have Museveni there, we're seeing Point Man, Kigami there, and then, of course, Democratic Republic of Congo, you have Kabila there. All of those are actually outliving their usefulness right now, and there's no plan of succession. I mean, Kabila is staying there even against the will of the people. That's boring. It's a big country. If they fight wars again, we're going to spend so much resources. UN doesn't have those resources to put there to stabilize there. And it's a dangerous place to have a war. They have access to uranium. They have access to all that. And there's Kigami there, and he's done well, but he should try to create succession. He's not doing that. There is Museveni. He's not worried about succession. Extended his term again. And then we come to Sierra Leone, which relatively has had a peaceful transition, my country, in 2007. Right now, the president is trying, by all means, to at least have a third term by proxy.
Not really. I think that, unfortunately, time happens not to be a best ally, really, because there are several other callers in the queue, if you don't mind. Let's go to Tafa in Ghana. Good evening, Tafa. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Tafa, can you hear me?
Well, hello, Dr. Chaka.
Yes, yes. I happen to be a doctor, but of course, without a clinic. Hello, Tafa. Hello, good evening, Richard from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. How are you, my brother?
I am hugely terrific, my brother. How are you?
I'm fine. It's been quite a long time when I last made some comments on our show. Now, first of all, if we remember very much, Mubarak won an election before he was deposed by 98%, and 2 months after being declared winner by 98%.
Hosni Mubarak.
Yes, Hosni Mubarak. He was taken out by the people who claimed had voted him. Actually, Shaka, Africa, we still have very big problems. Where we thought that Africa had got a breed of new rulers who would transform the continent into the continent that will be having transition. Museveni, Kagame, the likes of his former Ethiopian PM who died in office. Eventually, those are actually turning against the very people they promised a fundamental change. For example, Museveni, our own very well Museveni here, when he was swearing in, he said, this is not a fundamental change. And Africa's problem has been rulers who overstayed in power. But look, 33 years down the road, he has just changed the constitution to allow him surpass the 75 mark age, which was the barrier to bar him from contesting again. Look at Paul Kagame. Paul Kagame is changing constitution day in, day out. Look at Nkurunziza now, the man we thought was going to transform his country, Burundi. Shaka, Africa needs prayers. The leaders whom we call leaders are actually rulers and oppressors. Sincerely, let me pray for my country, Uganda, first before I turn my attention to Africa. Thank you very much, Shaka. God bless Africa. God bless Africa.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome, Richard. You heard him.
It's deplorable. It's shameful. I am a proud African. I'm a Pan-Africanist. I love my continent. I love it with every iota of blood in my vein.
But we have some countries where some good things are happening. Look
yes.
at South Africa, for example.
Let me interject here. Yes, South Africa is having the oldest political party in the continent and one of the oldest in the world.
And look at Mauritius.
Mauritius, too, is got its own problem. Remember this.
Yes.
President Zuma did not just walk away. No, though there was no
violence.
No, there was no violence. They have their system.
Right.
It worked.
Look at Botswana.
Botswana is a good example.
Ian Khama.
It's a good
he's
example.
He's stepping down next month.
Yes, and he's not
after
only stepping
years.
Down. He's standing
one year
for Africa.
Before his term, in fact.
He's standing up for Africa. He's mm-hmm. doing a great job. But that is not the way we see the continent of Africa. When Mohamed Bouzizi set himself on fire.
In Algeria.
In Tunisia. He started a revolution to liberate the entire continent. What happened?
So what happened to Tahrir Square
no,
in Cairo?
They lost it. It was an Arab Spring. It was not an African Spring. And we have to... If you see all the countries that thing sprung to, it was an Arab Spring. Africans do not... It was an Arab Spring. And it was even African countries that have majority Muslim, none of them went on a spring.
What about Burkina Faso?
The African Spring has not occurred. And it has not occurred, and we have to look for, and on, until we, and the guy that was just called and said, we need prayers. We have been praying and hoping. We need the spring to happen.
We need
the young people that were on the streets of the or this past weekend. We need African kids on the streets. We need an African spring.
I am not worried, given the changing demographics, with the help of the new social media, not those of us who were beneficiaries of the Gutenberg factor, the printing press.
Yes.
Now information is available. They can see what's happening in their neighborhood and beyond.
And the world.
They will bring about change because they have nothing to lose except their chains. And they are not invested in the status quo.
Unfortunately, when
again, I hate to say this, my brother. The producer has said it. It's time.
Okay.
It's not our best ally. Change. Well, on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Dr. Iyabo Obasanjo-Bello and Dr. Ebenezer Akwanga. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.